We would like to welcome to the podcast a new sponsor for 2025, HRO Adventures. Rusty and Jackie run the ultimate outdoor adventure location outside of Cooley City, Washington. Rusty provides world-class guided mule deer hunts, guided or DIY pheasant hunts, and other upland bird hunts too. If you have a special occasion coming up, a special corporate outing that you would like to set up, or a place that you would like to do your own private group training, give Rusty a call today. He specializes in the custom experience. Everything from hunting to bird watching you can find at HRO Adventures. Look them up at hroadventures.com and hiddenranchoutfitters.com. Tell them Dave sent you. Well, welcome back, everybody, to the HRO Adventures podcast out at the cabin out in Cooley City with Rusty Hunt. Good morning, Rusty.
Good morning, Dave.
I guess it's afternoon now, isn't it?
Yeah, we played around too much, visited too much, having you out here.
All right, so this is episode number 4. Did you ever think we'd make it to number 4?
It looked like a long ways off. It did.
All right, well, welcome to episode 4, everyone. This is a special landowner podcast. To discuss items pertaining to, for those of you that are hunters, it's permission season, time to start, as the snow's going away, time to start finding out if you can get permissions at places. And what we thought was important was to get a landowner's perspective on what that looks like to make it better for everybody, both the landowner and the person requesting permission. So it should be an important episode to get a perspective of what a landowner that's been on the land for many generations sees when you hop the fence and do things you're not supposed to. So we'd like to give you tips and tricks and ways to help interact and make everything smooth for everybody. So
that seems to be one of the things that over the years seems like people don't understand, you know, what landowners are thinking or what they're doing. And I think this podcast gives us a great opportunity to share kind of the landowner perspective. I was a landowner long before I was an outfitter, so I think I bring kind of an interesting, experience to the outfitter profession, being that landowner and dealing with it from that view first.
Yeah.
And then now as an outfitter. I know that some of the guys that I lease from, and we have one of them here today, that it's interesting when we sat down and talked for the first time, what landowners look at me, they're sitting here looking at me as a neighbor or a landowner, and then they're trying to deal with me as an outfitter. And when you come back to these landowners with the, you know, hey, this is your land, we're doing it your way, and just because the neighbor over here does something else, we'll only do on your land what you want. So they're individual lease agreements and things like that. So it's interesting. So I've dealt with landowners from the outfitter perspective, but also I have two brothers that are landowners too. Mm-hmm. Imagine that.
Yeah.
So,
and then I grew up in the South a little bit through the military and whatnot. So I've been the little boy with the shotgun knocking on the door or whatever, you know, and things are so different now than they used to be. And
amen.
We were taught certain just basic, you know, politeness and some things that are, you know, for lack of better term, they just don't exist now. People are a little more self-centered, and we didn't have Onyx and all these tools. So there was a lot of helping folks build fences in the off season and pulling tractors out of ditches and just things that, you know, just being neighborly, basically, that, you know, we're lost. So what I want to do is introduce Mr. Ron Lewis. Ron, good morning. Thanks for coming.
Good morning. You're welcome. Glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you. Ron's a fifth-generation farmer, previous hunter. And so between Ron and Rusty, there are legacies dating back to, gosh, you know, a century ago of homesteading. And then I've got a perspective of having, you know, knocked on doors and not had places and had to do that and been at the corner cafe in some little town with my orange hat and somebody asked me what I was up to. And gee, you should go down and talk to so-and-so. He'll let you hunt turkey down there. And so I think we've got a unique perspective. So, guys, welcome and thanks for making the time.
Well, thank you, Dave. And Ron, I want to thank you for coming today.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
We got
hopefully
people
we
that
can
are
Yeah, hopefully we can educate some people out there on what we have to deal with and what we do and why we do it. You know, well, those are the things.
You and I have known each other for, I mean, we've been working together now for, what, 16, 17 years, something like that. And so that's a great perspective. One is, you know, I got to be the old guy on here, so I had to get somebody older
than me. There you go.
Hey.
I feel younger already.
He's not being honest here, folks.
I feel looks younger already.
So, but, you know, you and I recently, just in the last, I think it was last year, actually, 4 or 5 months ago anyway, we were meeting with a couple of guys, and they were all like, "Oh, wow, Rusty, your parents homesteaded Steamboat Rock back in their early teens and 20s. And so that's the other reason I brought you along, is your great-grandfather was one more generation past that.
Because
wow,
you
came
cool.
in like in 1893?
Correct, yes. It was my great-great-grandfather and grandmother. And yeah, wow, their story is an amazing one.
So you took up all the good farmland and left my great grandfather the rocks on the other side.
Yeah, but look what you've got. You've got a real legacy here, Rusty.
I do.
I think both of us have something really unique. And from what I can understand, everybody that ventures up our way, we have a mile and a half dirt county road to get to our house. And so when people venture up our way and drive by our house, they're already out in the wild, you know, they're already there. And so it's kind of amazing. And different people's first expression when they finally arrive to our actual house used to be the highest house in Douglas County. And then in the 1950s, they opened up Badger Mountain south of Waterville. But still, it's the highest house in elevation in our area. And it's just a spectacular view. But it's so rugged and rough up there.
It's definitely
really,
rugged.
Really beautiful.
And today it was so beautiful outside. Dave noticed when he came in, he goes, "Hey there, I can see the snow line just onto our west." And I'm going, "Well, Ron lives in the snow line.
In the snow line,
there.
Yeah.
So we could see your house and then see the Cascades behind it."
Just to paint a picture coming down your road, off in the distance, it's very Banff looking for the listener, right? Just snow off in the distance with the mountains blocking and...
And
yeah,
then snow on the ground right at the farm. Our farm still has about a foot of snow on the level.
Wow.
There's still mountains of 3 foot high berms of snow where we've plowed in. It's really a different experience. And we're excited to work with Rusty Hunt and Hidden Ranch Outfitters in allowing guests to experience this remote farm year round.
Wow, that's super cool.
Yeah, that is one thing we, for the future, not so much for today's show as a landowner show, but for the future. HRO Adventures and Ron, we've got plans for the future because he lives in a very pristine, very unique area that harbors animals, harbors, you know, like one of the Fish and Wildlife Habitat guys calls it the nursery because Ron actually has a lot of springs that come out on his property and it's a very sheltered area, good place to... for animals to come, and especially this time, you could go down there right
now.
What
I was told by the WDF officer, the biologist that said that nursery comment, he said that because of the basalt cliffs that protect Cold Springs Basin from the northern winds. But he also made this comment that every animal that doesn't leave and go south for the winter locally goes to Cold Springs Basin. And so it's really a mecca of wildlife, and it's so difficult to get there. But people are going to find this is going to be on part of our tour guide system that HRO Adventures is planning on developing with me on my farm and then other local farmers as well. You'll be able to come and spend the night and wake up with Mother Nature and understand exactly what's going on and be able to access this land year round. I think it's just a spectacular thing.
And what are you
thing.
Farming up there?
Flaxseed, actually, is what a lot of my farm is in the crop reduction program. And so we've done that for wildlife preservation, mainly for the sharptail and the sage grouse.
Very cool.
There's actually a sage grouse incentive that's a part of the new farm bill that is posed to come through here any day. The Sage Grouse Initiative is going to be a new directive, and it's part of the things that we're talking about here today about what we have to do as farmers in the 21st century to manage our property and
It's a lot more to it than just putting up your fence and calling it a farm, right?
Well, you need to work with the Department of Agriculture. Exactly. And the Department of Fish and Wildlife locally here in Washington, I believe, in order to keep your farm modern, okay? In order to make sure that you've got all the T's crossed and all the I's dotted, and that you're doing as good of a job as possible as you can at protecting the wildlife for future generations.
Well, that's perfect segue for what we've got coming up next.
It is.
So why is a landowner podcast important to somebody out hunting, right? So we're looking at two items, to hunt on, but also the retrieval. If something gets away from you and you need to get across borders or something like that, that's where you might not have planned to deal with the landowner, but now you're into it. So moving ahead, you talked about agriculture, Department of Agriculture and WDFW. What kind of relationships do you need to have as a farmer with those kind of government organizations?
There's multiple levels of that. The Department of Agriculture really dictates what we should be doing for best practices.
Okay.
And we try to do that. Then that way we qualify for programs.
Mm-hmm.
Farming, it's not like other businesses. People need to understand we don't have a business inside of a building.
Yeah.
Okay, our business is outside, and it's subject to the weather.
Exactly.
If we get a lot of snow, this year we've been dealing with a lot of mud.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason of that is that last fall, when we got our first snow, the ground was not frozen.
Mm.
And so it snowed on unfrozen ground. This hasn't happened locally for 10, 12 years
now.
Oh,
really? Wow.
And so I've been predicting all year long it's going to be a mud bath in the spring. It's going to be muddy spring. And so sure enough, there's no runoff this year, and all the water got absorbed into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the first time in many, many years, 10, 12 years, we're going to see a lot of green coming up this spring because the snowpack didn't flash off. If the ground is frozen, like it's been for the last 15, 14 years here, 12 years, then the snow insulates that. And then when it melts in the spring, the water flashes off the frozen ground. It doesn't get absorbed.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't get the benefit of that as farmers.
Interesting.
So we have to, our whole industry has to be mobile. We have to be on our feet and ready to adapt to all these changing conditions.
Yeah.
So when we have to deal with somebody that doesn't take the time to come and find out who the landowner is on where they're planning to go hunting, that creates some real obstacles for us as landowners, both liability, both for the Department of Agriculture programs that we're trying to qualify for, and just best use practices. I had a guy I caught trespassing here years and years ago, and they didn't have a clue that I had let a man and his daughter go hunting in the field next to him. And so obviously there was a slight conflict there. And so we need to protect people's safety. We need to consider
a lot of things. You might have let somebody else on your land to do something else and just needs to be coordinated, right?
But we're not mean-spirited people. We got here by neighbors helping neighbors, and we understand that philosophy. And I'm, at this part of my life, I'm looking forward to allowing people to come into our farm and look at the beautiful place we have and spend the night in one of our cabins and really get back to nature.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful.
One of the things that that both Ron and I have done over the past two is with Fish and Wildlife is developing water. How to save the water, how to hold the water, how to make sure that we have, like he said, we'll have a lot of water in the spring, but then none in the fall.
Yeah.
So how do we develop a spring to keep it running so that the wildlife has water all year long? How do we put in water tanks, water systems, all of those different things? And that's working with, you'll see most all farmers up here. He talked about the Conservation Reserve Program, but also we have Fish and Wildlife that's coming in and doing habitat. And so they have assisted with us for putting bugs to take care of weeds in some places that'll take care of it biologically. They've also helped us come out and be able to catch water, put it into a tank so that the wildlife can use it as well. Or clean up a place where it doesn't wash out the road so it doesn't tear things up. A lot of those kind of habitat spots, planting roses, planting trees, planting those kind of deals. Fish and Wildlife, you'll see most landowners that are well-rounded, that are moving on their feet, that are taking care of their property. They're also conservation-minded because they need to save the water. They need to be able to fill the ground and take care of the weeds. And so most of us have, and Ron's a good example of that, have relationships with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, with the biologists, with the habitat specialists. And even to the point of game management, you'll see a lot of times in the hunting, on the hunting rules, where they have too many deer in an area, or they need to take some deer out, or they need to manage something, or they have a problem in the winter come with the deer coming down on this property or whatever, that we will work through with that. Well, Fish and Wildlife needs to have that relationship with landowners. So yeah. it goes both ways.
It sure does. Yeah.
And so that's something that, you know, that you'll see a lot of the landowners in this area. And I think that's important for the for those that are coming out here to recreate, whether you're coming out to take pictures of the animals or whether you're coming out to to hunt them, like what we're doing with Hidden Ranch Outfitters, but also with our tours, just taking people out to enjoy, like those golden eagles. Nobody hunts golden eagles. Well, at least they're not supposed
to. Not supposed to be.
But yeah, so, you know, I say that tongue in cheek.
But they're gorgeous to watch.
To come out and look at them. Sometimes the best places are to go look at them are on private property.
Yeah.
And that's where we need to be able to do some of that.
Yeah, so as we talk about, let's just kind of get to the juicy topic, which would be trespassers. Is there a typical makeup of what you guys see as trespassers? Well, doesn't necessarily have to be hunters, but is there like a typical makeup?
I guess that in my, I like Ron's.
It's a loaded question.
No, there's not. You know, it's like this. Here's what I've concluded, and I'm guilty of this myself. When I was a younger man, much younger man, I'm much more in control now. There's a disease out there that afflicts young men and young women, and it's called buck fever.
Aha.
And buck fever can make the most intelligent, respectful person do some of the most disrespectful things you can imagine. They would never think of doing this, and then all of a sudden, they're confronted with nowhere to go shooting, limited places, limited game, and so when they see something, it drives them just totally crazy sometimes. And some people, you know, and so I try to have an understanding for that, and you know, I don't know what to tell them other than you shouldn't disrespect and you shouldn't trespass. Those are not very good things to do. And I think that there's a better way. And I think that's why we're here today, is to try to get people to consider things before you get yourself in trouble by trespassing.
So let's dig into that just a little bit. So you brought up respect. You know, obviously it's somebody's livelihood, somebody's generational livelihood, but let's get into things people can even relate to. So number one, safety, right? If you let somebody else out there,
or if I'm personally out there,
and you're working something and somebody's shooting without an appropriate backstop or something like that, that can definitely be an issue. But let's look at liability. We're in such a litigious kind of society that somebody, you know, steps in a hole and twists their leg out there. I mean, you may be involved in part of the medical evacuation.
Well, if I dug the hole, I might be. But now, if a gopher dug the hole or a badger, then I think my insurance would protect them. But
I mean, somebody's going to have to come rescue. That's now a coordination between the landowner and trying to get out there.
We avoid that, but we're trying to be respectful to the people, and so I think the way to describe it is that a landowner is really a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And that he's going to reflect back to you whatever attitude you approach him with. If somebody comes to me and they're polite and they're kind and they're explaining a real problem that come up, you bet I'm going to be there to help them.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And then in safety, I kind of lump in a second category of the out of season, that doesn't fit the pattern, you're not sure, like they could be up to no good, and you're, you know, miles from the house, you know what I mean? So you just never know what you could encounter. I've done a lot of steelhead fishing and items where I find camps in the middle of nowhere that are used for bad purposes, that are polluting the ground.
Yes.
And I got a extricate myself out. I just got into somebody's area to do something. And I mean, we mark them and take appropriate actions, but you know what? There's two-legged predators out there is the way I look at it.
Yes.
And somebody could be at the end of something they're doing and end up on your property and you have to deal with it. So, you know, we want people to be sympathetic. This isn't about jumping over a fence. This is they can get hurt. They could hurt others. There's liability. And sometimes you don't know who you're dealing with, so you have to approach it in a certain demeanor.
Every time.
Right?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you can't be the super friendly guy in overalls and find out these folks are loaded to the gills and this is going another direction.
Yeah,
so
we want
people to understand what, you know, it's almost like a policeman walking up to a traffic stop. You just don't know what you're involved with.
What you're getting
with.
Into.
And,
yeah. And so, that's the same with landowners. We go up to a trespasser. We have.
That's what I mean, right?
If you don't have a relationship or recognize the person, you're walking into a situation you don't know. And then in hunting, you're walking in with somebody
Everybody has an arm,
whether it's a bow or a muzzleloader or a rifle. You know, everybody's armed. And so those situations, you got to be careful not to escalate those.
So do you guys have a couple of good, juicy trespasser stories that...
I don't know if you call it juicy or not.
Had potential to go sideways.
So, one of the most odd ones for me was when I caught this elderly couple trespassing with their camp trailer out in the middle of nowhere. And I drove in, and there was a wonderful elderly lady sitting in camp. And I asked her if she had permission to hunt there. And her reply was she didn't know she needed permission. And I said, well, you do, and this is private property here. And she asked me what my problem was, and I kind of confused by that, but I was very polite to her, and I asked her if that was her husband walking in with the big Irish setter bird dog, and she affirmed it was. And when he come walking up, I asked him the same thing, and he gave me the same answer, and his reply was the same, only it was even more intense. He said that they really didn't understand why a farmer would not object to a couple of older people who were being respectful parking away from their house going hunting. And so I looked at him and I smiled and I didn't reply right away. And I'm real good with dogs and real good dog guy. And I get down on both knees and I get his dog to come here, and this beautiful Irish setter, just a beautiful dog. And I start scratching his chest and all around his ears. The dog's loving it.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm holding my hand underneath it. In the beginning, the guy was not understanding what I was doing. And then pretty soon he realized my hand was filling up with weeds. Mm-hmm. And I asked the gentleman, I said, now, you said you're from Oregon. I said, you've been hunting other places? And he confirmed, yeah. We've been hunting in Hermiston for birds, and we've been hunting in the Tri-Cities. And then another place, I don't remember, there was three places in all that they had been bird hunting, and they brought every seed from every place that they were at to our farm in large quantities. He was shocked. And you know what I was pleasantly surprised by? He apologized to me and said that they would immediately leave and that they wouldn't come back. And that, you know, and I explained to him, I said, you know, it would have been a lot better for us to meet with you knocking on my door.
Mm-hmm.
Said, you drove right by my house to get here. That's the thing that is missing in today's society.
Yeah.
You know, I was fortunate growing up in that my grandparents legally adopted and raised me all my life. And my dad was an outdoor enthusiast on steroids. We were always fishing and hunting, and he instilled with me when we were hunting off of our own land that you do not have a lazy wrist. And by that he meant you go knocking on doors, and if they don't own the property, you ask them who does. And if they tell you no, you don't go back.
Yep.
You know,
and they may have a good reason, right? They might have just done dump runs or had issues, and they're tired of it, is what I've discovered if you dig a little deeper.
Fence cutters, weeds.
But you hit on a good thing with the Department of Agriculture and certain programs. Weed eradication, you know, these folks are now pollinating stuff you're in a program trying to fight with. So
they're bringing us weeds that we don't have.
So they're killing some of your stuff that you're doing and costing you money to operate in your program. So we want people to be sympathetic to that.
Well, I don't think most people, just like those people, they assume in their mind for what they're doing in a very specific deal that we're not harming anything. Why would anybody have any problems and this, that, and the next thing? Where that's the whole thing. They've talked themselves into, I'm okay out here trespassing.
Yeah.
But there's some of that. And Ron and I are both, you know, we predate Go Hunt and Onyx Maps. And so we dealt with land or trespassers that had looked at a map maybe a couple days ago or whatever, and now they were in the wrong spot. They maybe thought they were on, you know, public ground or whatever.
Didn't realize they crossed a border somewhere.
That excuse is long.
That was there. This is now.
So many great products. GoHunt
and Onyx maps and all that. You have, and I thought it was going to be terrible because Hidden Ranch Outfitters, I have a lot of leases on private ground. So I touch a lot of public ground. These little 80s, section, three, you know, even 640s. But a lot of 320s, 80s, and quarters that are public that are checkerboarded in here. Okay, so guys knew that those were in here. Well, now that I am controlling the access out here, we have we're managing the animals a little bit better. It's not over hunted like it used to be. So people want to get to those little spots. Well, we I thought, oh, this is going to be terrible. Actually, it got way better.
Did it really?
Because and the big thing was nobody had an excuse anymore. I mean, all we had to do was drive up, and they knew
they
right away
knew.
They needed me on this side of the line. You know, I took a young lady hunting for one of the landowners that I leased from, and he asked me if I would take his secretary hunting, and I said I would.
The only sounds thing, like a trap.
And this was a whole, you know, we did all this, we planned this like, you know, a year in advance. Okay, well, when it came hunting season, she was 7 months pregnant.
Oh my gosh!
And I went, ooh, that adds another layer to this whole guiding thing.
It's well, a few layers.
She calls me like, oh, the week before the hunt, and we had talked and everything prior to that, and she calls me a week before the hunt, and she goes, you know, I just want to know, would it be okay if I brought my husband? Absolutely. I thought, that's perfect. Well, her husband came. Well, you know, this is a local landowner, and it's his secretary, so her husband and them, they live right here. Well, he had hunted some of these public ground around this area before, so he knew. He knew where the boundaries were. And so we were out hunting, and we were watching some deer, and we were doing our little thing, guiding here. He got extremely upset because two hunters walked right up to the fence and were standing right on the fence between the public ground and the private ground. And they were not looking at the public ground. They were standing right next to the fence within arm's reach of the barbed wire, looking all onto the private. And that upset him. And I looked at him and I says, you hunted over there before? And he goes, yes. And he goes, and they shouldn't even be looking over here. I said, well, that's a dream world, okay? If you're the landowner, you understand people are going to walk that fence every day. And so the animals know that as well. And so as an outfitter,
yeah, convince
and as a guide,
the animals have a briefing every morning about the boundaries.
And so, you know, it's kind of an interesting deal. Those hunters were legal and they did not trespass. It could have been because they saw us on the other side of the fence.
Sure.
But, you know, anyway, this is a good story because those guys went their way and hunted, and we got to hunt on our land just the way we wanted to, and it worked out very, very well. But so the Onyx maps and that kind of deal cleared up all.
That's awesome to hear.
The judges, everybody around here in this area knows you get caught trespassing. You don't get to say, oops, I'm sorry, I was lost.
You had so many ways to do due diligence, right?
Because
before you started.
We have stories prior to all of that kind of the tools that we have now. That they could go before the judge, and the judge would give them a 6 months. You know, well, don't trespass for 6 months, and we'll defer your cost. Well, that helps me none because it's a year till the next hunting season. Yeah. You know, you needed to make it 2 years. Don't trespass for 2 years, and I'll defer the cost. But
yeah, they sit out during the off season
because they just would wait the 6 months and back to trespassing. Yeah. So it has really made things a lot better that way for us to be able to say, no, you know, you're
well,
on the
good
wrong
to hear.
Side. The other thing is one of the things that a lot of people we have done here now, especially with Hidden Ranch Outfitters, is we've went, the sheriff came to us because we have so much borderland with public ground, so much opportunity for people to trespass onto us. And so we were getting to know the sheriff fairly well. And so talking to him, we've turned around from instead of chasing people off, coming up to them, getting into that that confrontational frustration mode. They're frustrated. We're frustrated. We went in and said, hey, you know where the line is. You stay on your side. We'll stay on ours. And, you know, we know you're out here. You know we're out here. Let's get along. Instead of making this a bad situation, we try to do more of the informational, try to make it work and make it easier for guys. And that has, you know, as hard as it was for us to make that change and to go that direction, it has paid off in spades. We see the ups and downs. We still deal with people that want to trespass and do things, but we are seeing way more positives about it, and people that realize we're only protecting what we have the right to protect, and we're allowing them to enjoy just like we do. We love to hunt. I don't want to discourage people from hunting. I want more people to hunt, but they have to realize what they're doing as well, and I think that's helped.
Well, Rusty, my coffee mug is empty, so I think it's time for a refill.
You know, I could use some, too.
All right. Well, we'll pause here for a quick message from HRO Adventures, and then when we come back, let's talk about how hunters can do their part and come back and discuss what they should be doing.
Perfect.
Sound good?
Sounds great.
If you have a special occasion coming up, a special corporate outing that you would like to set up, or a place that you would like to do your own private group training, give Rusty a call today. He specializes in the custom experience. Rusty and Jackie run the Ultimate Outdoor Adventure location outside of Cooley City, Washington. Rusty provides world-class guided mule deer hunts, guided or DIY pheasant hunts, and other upland bird hunts too. Everything from hunting to bird watching you can find at HRO Adventures. Look them up at hroadventures.com and hiddenranchoutfitters.com. Tell them Dave sent you. All right, well, welcome back to the HRO Adventures podcast. Let's see. Next, we've got... How can hunters, but let's lump in, you know, ecotourists, everybody else that's out there, what are some recommendations on how they can interact with landowners and basically to make all these interactions go smoother and better? What are some tips and tricks you have?
Well, I think the number one is they need to be able to come out and introduce themselves to us. Like Ron said, you know, you need to go out, you need to be able to knock on the doors, you need to be able to be polite. And you got to remember that every farmer, rancher, landowner out here runs their own business. They're their own weatherman. They're their own crop specialist. They're their own who makes a decision to buy what, equipment, what seed, what everything. So they have a lot on their minds. They have a lot of different directions. You never know what a landowner or farmer or rancher out here is dealing with that day. So you need to be, when you need to come up and you need to get to start these relationships now, so that you get to know them, and see them. And that's the biggest thing that I think that people out there that want to come on, whether they're coming out here to see the geographical things that we have going on or the geology that we have here, the rocks that we have out here, the erratics that we have. Oh, I got to be careful because not everybody agrees that they're erratics. I found that out earlier. And I call them haystack rocks because I'm born and raised.
Yeah, those are not erratics. Those are local rocks that have just been moved and displaced from the basalt shelf by the glacier activity itself. You know, for me, there's really two things at play here that a person should think about when they're planning on an activity that's going to be near a farm. That number one, that farm is probably at least a couple thousand acres. A 2,000 acre farm is considered a small farm in today's world. And so you've got really two choices. You can either choose to drive up and knock on our door and say hello and introduce yourself, or we can meet out in the field where you're either trespassing or perhaps you've decided just to illegally park next to our field. And, you know, I guess I want to remind our viewers that there is an RCW and a local county code that both make stopping and parking on a county road illegal. And it's there for both your protection and our protection. All right. We don't want to be encumbered when we're moving our equipment from field to field. We don't want to not know who it is, but really it all boils down to respect. And if you want to get the farmer on your side, which I really suggest you try to do, it's a really wonderful thing. We've lived here all of our lives, and we know the tips and the tricks and the insider knowledge that we're not afraid to share with you. But if we meet you and you're outside of your vehicles parked somewhere next to our property, and you could have made the choice to drive to our property, then, you know, we're going to wonder why. And so
I have a story. We were moving combines, wheat harvest.
Yeah, waving you down while you're doing that.
And
it's probably not super helpful.
We just pulled off the road, and we opened up the field, and we were pulling the trucks in and, you know, moving all the equipment. And we just got back to started to where we were going to cut this field. And all of a sudden, this camper pulls up. And, you know, I remember at the time, for whatever reason, I was off my combine, and I was standing there, and all of a sudden, this camper pulls up, and the guy pulls out. Immediately, my thought in my head was, the guy's lost, and he's going to ask me how to get to Grand Coulee Dam, or, you know, am I on the right road to OMAC, you know, or something like that, or which way is Spokane? These are things I've heard before,
you
know. Oh,
yeah, I can imagine.
And so I see the guy, he walks out, and he goes, is this a combine? And I says, it is a combine. And he goes, my family has never seen a combine before. And he says, so we took this drive because we heard it was wheat harvest. And we wanted to come up and see a combine. And so you see how this conversation got started. It was the way that they approached us, the way that they were considerate, the way that they talked to us. And that story ends with, you know, each one of their kids got to take, you know, a little bit of a 10-15 minute ride in the combine and see things. And we talked about things. They learned about farming that day. When they had to ask me if this was a combine or not, you know, they don't know a lot about the wheat harvest in our area. So those are the good kind of stories. And that's what we're trying to promote here, is that, you know, the way that you approach a landowner, the way that you make that, build that relationship from the time the first, you know, you only get a first impression once. So make that a good one. Make it the best you can. You never know. You walk into a landowner that's, you know, just blew a $5,000 tire on his combine. Mm-hmm. He's going to be a little grumpy.
Yeah, read the room a little bit.
Maybe I'm just talking about my brother. I don't know. But yeah, you know, they don't understand that, you know, their tire cost them $250, $300 a tire. And all of a sudden, I just blew that tire and that's a $7,000 tire.
Yikes.
You know, that's going to be a hit for us, and those, you don't know what you're walking into.
Yeah,
you
not
know.
A good day.
My good guy story comes from the Audubon Society member. There's a polite lady, don't know what her name is, that she comes up every year bird watching, and she claims that the local Audubon Society chapter says that our area is one of the best regionally there is, that we have just a plethora of birds to watch. But the first thing she did about 10 years ago, was she drove into our home and she knocked on our door and she said that she was here and that she didn't. I said, do you want to trespass? She says, no, I just want to let you know that if you see my vehicle here and then I'm stopped taking pictures of a bird that I'm not, I'm me. And this is who it is. And I was just almost dumbfounded with what she did, and I told her how much I appreciated that. And I really do believe that she went home and either wrote something in a blog or
possibly went to
a meeting.
That's where we're at now.
And I've had several members of the local Audubon Society chapter here that if they see me driving around, they'll hold their arm up and stop me and ask me, are you Mr. Lewis? I am. Well, we're from the Audubon Society. I've got, I think, three now that have done that to me. And so,
that's cool.
Boy, that's really cool. You know, that to me, that is what's going to take to make it successful. Like it used to be. It used to be, we were talking about this before the show, Rusty, that our fathers, our grandfathers, our great-grandfathers before us all experienced respectful, polite hunters. If we told them no, we have too many hunters now, or we have a full load, they understood it and said thank you and went away. They didn't try to sneak in at dark the following morning. Like it seems to be more of that going on now.
Really?
And so I think if we could encourage somehow the population that, you know, we as farmers, we can really, really, really show you a great time.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the point, right?
You can't imagine some of the wildlife.
Oh, yeah.
That opportunities that you're driving by.
Yeah.
You know, it's just unbelievable.
And we're excited that other folks would want to share in that. So that's why we want to help them find a pathway to do that the right way, right?
Yeah, well, I think Rusty and I are on that program
together. We've talked about that, Ron and I have, and we've talked to people, and that's why we're talking about it, is because we've talked to people over the last 10 years that are, they want to know.
It's
great that
they're interested.
They're interested in what we're doing and why we're doing it and why we farm this way. And, you know, hey, when Elon Musk builds a tractor that will run forever and
while you're in bed,
we're all for it, you know. But right now, there is no way to farm. There is no way to grow what we need to grow. Yeah. We need to let the technology catch up with us.
Yeah, no kidding.
And help us get through that. Mm-hmm. And those are the things. Most landowners, unless they've really been burned and really been ran over by, and there's some guys that are, that are really burned out with people. But most landowners, once you get to letting them talk and talk about their history and how many generations they've been here, people love that.
Yeah, there's a history.
And the landowner loves that. Yeah. That's one of those things about the landowners. I think the landowners could do to be better. And that's been out there for a long time. Mm-hmm. We've heard it in all of our... Ron and I go to a lot of landowner meetings.
Do you?
With the Fish and Wildlife, or not with Fish and Wildlife not so much, but with USDA.
I bet.
And to get our pesticide license, we all have to go get credits and go to all these meetings. And so we talk about these kind of things about helping people understand farming. You know, Ag in the Classroom is a great program to teach kids about, you know, your milk didn't come from Safeway. Your milk actually came out of a cow
through
the pasteurization process to be put in that jug or that you bought at Safeway.
The anti-animal person, but they have leather on. It's just
exactly.
You don't understand what's happening here, do you?
For me personally.
And nothing against them.
Just. I've got this real inner desire today in my life to be a part of, and that's why I'm so proud to be here with you fellas today. I thank you again for having me here and be able to work with you, Rusty. I have a real endeavor in my life to help preserve hunting. I believe that what we're seeing is going to be difficult to manage in the future this way, and that we're going to have to make some hard choices here in order to successfully have opportunities for people to go hunting.
Yeah.
I personally have a soft spot for young first-time hunters. I have a soft spot for wounded military veterans, and I think that those two, and just all seniors in general, and I think that, you know, we can do a lot together, but if people are going to trespass and try to sneak in on us, the chances of you getting caught, we have newer equipment for that as well. We have new video cameras, we have motion detectors,
exactly.
We have wireless stuff that you can't imagine we have access to. Yeah. And so I think that
you're already on camera.
You know, my dad used to say this a lot when he was alive, is that, and this was, he died in 1998, and Kenny Lewis was his name, marvelous man, and he used to always say that a few people are ruining hunting for everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that that's still the case today.
Mm-hmm.
We as farmers kind of have a tendency to group and generalize all hunters as being in this group of kind of disrespectful people that will do anything to get a buck and don't have very many morals.
Yeah.
And that's a mistake I found, because I think it's the other way around. I think the vast majority of hunters out there today are ethical, and that they really do want to be considerate of the farmer.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other side of the fence, how do we as farmers deal with it? If we, like for example, me, I'm blessed with owning about 2,000 acres, just a little bit over that. It's limited to the number of people, and yet I get every year requests from 30, 40 different people. The land won't manage that many people.
Gotcha.
And so that's the other problem here that we've got to try to, we're trying to protect the wildlife and offer the wildlife some sanctuary. We like to have some carryover to the following years. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's a natural thing for a farmer to want to conserve and preserve. Our ability to do that is greatly reduced by trespassing.
Yeah, and we've seen like national parks and whatnot, quite a few of them have a permit system, right? So many heartbeats are allowed in, and then
that's it.
Like you look at Mount St. Helens, right? There's, you can't have 2,000 people in the summer walk on those trails.
That's
so
right.
And you got to limit it. So it's nothing new to us, and you guys are managing wildlife, managing you know, the stuff you're growing, managing access to the land. So it's the same exact thing. It shouldn't be that big of a stretch. So that was my next thing, was what could landowners do to be on the reciprocating side of that? So that was a good segue.
Yeah, I think that we can, you know, landowners can help the situation by not prejudging people, mm-hmm. and by being really polite to people that try to get permission to go hunting in advance. And again, if there's people out there with young children, first-time shooters, with disabled veterans, I encourage you to go around to the local landowners. I think you'll be greatly received. Landowners, we've just about given up on people coming to ask us for permission. We usually anticipate that opening morning, we'll have to stop what we're doing, park all of our equipment. It's almost like Wenatchee Apple Blossom. You know, those businesses shutter their businesses, plywood their windows.
Oh my gosh.
That's almost what we're getting to in today's society, and it's really unfortunate. And you know, there's another aspect of that too. Our county roads, by the time fall hits, are usually pretty well worn, especially on dry years. And so when we get all this other traffic on them,
oh yeah, it doesn't take
we
much.
We have to pay for the upkeep on those roads. We're
that's miles and miles of road. Yeah,
access for everyone.
And I've seen it on the flip side too. If you're walking up a driveway that has no trespassing, trespassers will be shot. Survivors will be shot again.
Yeah.
Not the door to knock on, right?
Yeah.
Maybe move on. So again, kind of read the situation, right? Now, on you guys both have signage on your different property boundaries. What do you have, phone numbers and stuff set up so somebody can reach you pretty easily?
I do.
Yeah, Ron's got his property.
Okay.
Ron has a certain way that he wants to
that's
sign
what I'm
his
thinking.
Property.
Yeah.
We do put up some of our signs around that.
Okay.
And I try to be consistent with all of the different landowners and the stuff that I lease. I try to be consistent with the
signage.
And with
leases, you're going to have different requirements.
Somewhere around
lease,
1990, the rules for requiring a landowner to post his land ended.
Yeah.
And so we as landowners today are not required to post our land.
That's right.
I still do it. I'm kind of old school. And I don't want there to be any questions, and let people know that, you know, you're coming into a real sensitive area.
Yeah. No, it's a great buffer, isn't it?
Yeah, but I don't want to be intimidating, too. And so, you know, is what I've done is two things. It's kind of ironic that you said that, because I put my name and my phone number on the signs. And then I take down the signs that said we're going to shoot you if you come in and ask for permission. And so, you know.
Those were effective signs.
We might have been
with
scared.
Your bulldozer sitting next to it.
No, I'm being facetious here. We never did do anything such as that. And, you know, in fact.
But you
time,
know what I mean. There's obvious signs when these folks do not want to be bothered. They're busy. Maybe they got bees or something and they don't want you coming up near
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely.
There are obvious signs, right, to turn away, go try somebody else.
Don't come here.
But I encourage people to visit the Hidden Ranch Outfitters, the Hidden Ranch Outfitter HRO Adventures websites for information.
Ask questions. Yeah.
Ask questions. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Oh, become involved. Yeah. You know, we had a situation here 10 years ago where somebody was poaching deer at night.
Ugh.
And so the sheriff became involved, and there was a deputy that was also really good hunter. In fact, it was kind of funny because I let this deputy earlier, like 10 years before that, 20 years ago, his daughter shot her first buck on our land because I had a program for young kids on our land.
Oh, wow, that's very cool.
And so he was patrolling And roughly about midnight, he heard shots. And to make a long story short, he caught two guys dragging a head only off of a buck they had killed at night. And those two gentlemen got in a lot of trouble. I prided him. He remembered what I told him about the Ron Lewis technique, and he told the guys that they'd be in a lot less trouble if they went back and retrieved the carcass and brought the meat out.
Changes it,
right? So they did. Suddenly they had a desire to bring that meat out. They weren't just after the trophy. But you know, that's the kind of person that, you know, we really have the hardest time dealing with, is the guy that he's,
and not judging everybody based on that guy, right?
And not judging everybody based on that one experience. So I think we're beyond that now, though. And there is, we're realizing as hunters that there is a large group of people that are polite, courteous, and will offer respect. Those are the ones that we want to invite to participate in what we got going on.
Well, and I think that that's one of the things that HRO Adventures that's went into all those years of us talking about it, of how to help people get access to property, to
how to avoid problems
and avoid the problems.
So they'll come to you for an adventure and access, but they're going to leave having learned quite a bit about
exactly
that kind of interaction.
You
right?
know, so I guess
there's definitely learning going on.
I'm not sure it's a long, you know, you're not getting repeat customers. Because I'm trying to help people learn how to get access.
But I mean, as a byproduct, they're going to learn how to interact.
Exactly.
Right?
So they're going to learn how to interact.
What a great byproduct. Yeah.
But, you know, on the other side of the coin, there are some landowners out there that there's a trust that they have with me because I am a landowner and I am a neighbor,
well,
not just an outfitter. And so, Rusty, I don't want to deal with these guys, so I just tell them no.
Yep.
But if you want to deal with them, then here's the parameters. You
Great
know,
idea.
Don't chase all the cows off the lake.
Close the gate behind you.
Keep the gates closed. Don't put all the trash out here. If you're going to sit here and have lunch, pick it all up and take it with you. And those kind of things. And there's a trust level that they have. And so those are the kind of things that we're trying to provide for both the landowners and the non-landowners. Those that want to go out and enjoy it. And then those that own the property and protect it.
And there's
so how do we do that?
To kind of emphasize on what we're all saying here too, I want to bring in another fact that has changed the atmosphere here for us. I believe it was 2020, might have been 2019. Weyerhaeuser decided that on all their forest land, they were no longer going to allow public access.
Right.
After millions of dollars in dump fees, I have been round and round with
and
them about.
So I personally saw an increase locally in people wanting to go hunting on public ground. And our public areas, I mean, as landowners, you can't help but see the public ground next to you and watch how popular it is.
Little
and
pumpkin patch out there.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's not just us small farmers that are doing this. It's large corporations now. And unfortunately, there's going to need to be a different way of doing business for people, for hunting and fishing, unfortunately. That we live in a different time period. There's more people. There's better equipment. And
well, on the western side of our state, a lot of stuff's been shut down because the big timber companies owned it. You could buy permits. Then fire started. You know, refrigerators got dumped. And I worked with them on a project years ago, and it was millions of dollars a year in dump fees.
And so understandable
fees.
Where they
And they just can't
why.
Keep going like that. It's so just, you know what? They closed the gate. Nobody has access.
And so the farmers have done the same thing here. I was explaining to Rusty earlier that when my great-grandfather died, I was 14 years old, and in 1973, and we took over the farm full-time at that time, and I was about 17 years old, and I asked my dad, we'd lived there for a few years, and my dad, this was his attitude, if somebody would come and ask him for permission to go deer hunting, he'd give it to him. He'd give him a written permission slip.
A written slip.
And I asked him, I said, Dad, is there a limit? He said, no. I said, well, why do you do that? And he said, well, he said, because the neighbor that owns 10,000 acres, we only own two, and he owns 10,000, he just locks everything up and goes away. And everybody knows that. And so I know that there's going to be 50, maybe 100 hunters hunting right next to us. And so if I give out permission to the people I know, that's going to kind of defer that and keep the guys that I know on our side. Mm-hmm. And so I think back in the day, that philosophy worked.
There's a policing that happens if... you know, Rusty's busy farming and can't be near his stuff, and he's given somebody permission. If my truck's there a few days a week, if they saw a guy walking around, I noticed the folks doing dumping move on. Yeah. They don't want any attention or anything. So something for landowners to also consider, right, is giving maybe somebody access can help defer other issues, because now they see activity and they don't want to be anywhere near activity.
There's all kinds of opportunity for people that hunt to have a relationship with a farm.
Security for you.
My dad used to tell me, when you're going hunting on someone else's property, don't have a lazy wrist.
Yep.
And it's what he meant by that was, don't hesitate. Go out of your way to try to find who the landowner is.
Yeah.
And
take some trash out with you. I've done
that. Don't be afraid to ask him, is there something I could do here to perhaps help you?
That's what I said. I put up many fences, pulled tractors out of ditches. It's amazing the doors that open when you just are friendly and help somebody. I have no other arterial motive, but I'm on a remote road, and this guy's stuck in the mud right by the road, and I'm like, I got a toe strap. Can I help?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, it's a few hours before my help gets here. Let's try it. And you get them out, and next thing you know, you met somebody. So I've had that happen, and just be friendly. So. All right, well, we're coming up on the end of our time here, but we always have our segment of Rusty's Calendar. What's coming up? What should people plan for?
Well, I'll tell you what. As far as my calendar goes, we are in that time of year as the spring is starting to sprung. As we talked about earlier, you know, the snow has left here at the cabins, but it's still at Ron's house, so we're kind of still in that transition area. A lot of guys are bringing their dogs out. We're getting a lot of pups that are being trained, getting ready for next season. We're getting a lot of older dogs that, whether they have one or two seasons left into them, but the guys are wanting to hunt them before we run out of birds, before it gets too warm to hunt anymore. So we're seeing a lot of guys coming in. So if you guys got some time and you want to get your dogs back out, we still have birds available. I talked to one of the pheasant growers, and he's still got plenty of birds. We should be able to keep people going here for at least another month and a half, at least till the end of April, I think. But you need to get me now, because I don't want to hold any birds over the summer.
You got to do some planning, right?
So as far as the training goes, as far as getting those last hunts in for the dogs, and then the other thing is people have cabin fever.
I'm one of them.
Yeah, and it's just time. If my dog will hunt, I'm going out because I want to get outside. Okay. I've been stuck inside. I've been stuck in the cold too long, and so I want to get outside.
And what a beautiful time of the year with the snow and the Cascade Mountains here in the background. So it's just beautiful here.
Well,
and
with the view we have, absolutely.
But that creates cool temperatures too. As long as that snowpack stays up in the mountains.
Oh, baby.
You know, we're downwind from that. So it's like having an air conditioner here.
Yeah,
so
it really
you get
is.
That wind, it'll cut right through you.
Oh, yeah, you want to be sure to dress warm if you're coming here to visit.
Because it's sunny out there doesn't mean, I don't need my coat today.
Yeah.
Because you may need your coat.
Yeah, that's you always right. have that gear right now.
Absolutely.
All right, what else is on tap?
The other thing is we're getting ready for fishing season.
Okay.
As we've talked about before, we're going to start offering fishing boats for rent. Those are going to be all just within, a certain amount of drive from my house, because that's where we're going to be delivering the boats and how we get those boats out. But as far as I know, nobody else is giving people the opportunity to come out and rent a boat to go fishing specifically for that. I mean, there's people that rent them in the summer to go out, but not during the spring and that. So we're going to make that available. Those boats will be available here starting at the end of March. And so we'd like folks to let us know if they want those. We've already got a couple of days booked up with the new boats. Get on the schedule quick.
And so if I want to rent a boat, Rusty, and go fishing for the day, let's say I want to go up behind Chief Joseph Dam in Bridgeport. Are you going to bring the boat down there for me? And put it in the water for me and pull it up to the dock. And all I got to do is step in it and go?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, it'll be, we'll deliver it right to the dock, get it unloaded off the trailer and get it on the
soil. What am I going to need? Am I going to need my own insurance? Am I going to need a skipper's permit? What am I going to need for to operate the boat?
There is a boat rental agreement that you will be signing. You will have to have a credit card. It will have to be all be paid for with a credit card on here. That's how we're going to take care of damages. I mean, it's no different than renting a car at this point. We have an age limit. We want only those in their 20s to come over here. Or to rent the boats.
And so, in Washington, we got to have our boaters card. Boaters card. So look that up on the Washington State website.
And then you're going to have to provide your own gear. We're not going to give you any fishing poles or anything like that. But the boat will have a fire extinguisher on it. It will, be full of fuel, but there will be a charge for that to fill that up.
Will it have a fish finder on it? Will there be pole holders on the boat?
There are going to be some pole holders on the boats. Mm-hmm. The boats are going to be set up for you to generally fish. You can bring the boats should all up to taking a group of 2 to 4, even a single guy could be able to go out by himself. But you don't want to overload the boat or anything. We'll have the flotation devices, so it'll all be safe with the Coast Guard and everything.
But Rusty, if I wanted to bring up some friends or family and go on a sightseeing tour, could you drive the boat for me? Could I hire you?
I do not have my license to guide people out there on
guided
those boats.
Trip right on the water.
So, but I would be more than happy to go along to explain or just talk about it and show you things and that kind of deal.
How big are the boats?
These boats are 18-foot Lunds. They're SSV models. We've got them really set up, really great for fishing. They're tiller drives, so they're very simple to operate. These boats are a lot of lodges that do salmon fishing up in British Columbia or on bigger lakes around the country.
So now these boats are going to be available during hunting season for hunting?
They are. These boats should be available year-round. Okay. So for access anywhere, as we all know, Rufus Woods has very limited access by road to everywhere, but you can access most of it by a boat.
So what kind of waterfowl equipment? do the boats come with blinds on them for waterfowl hunting?
We're going to try to set something up for that. Mm-hmm. But what we've seen is a lot of people have their own idea of how they want the boat set up. And so we're just providing the boats. We bought these boats. We specifically ordered them so they're matte finished, so they're not shiny. So they're those kind of, so they're set up so that you can hunt from them if you want to. You're responsible for your own license and your own, just like anything else out there hunting. But this would be able to get you access into a place where you wouldn't have that access without a boat.
Understood. Wonderful. That's exciting news.
We had a lot of great help getting those set up. You want to give a plug for our guys in Yakima?
Yes. I want to say big, big thank you to Valley Marine. Valley Marine and Dan Allen down there has been wonderful. I love dealing with local vendors, with local people. Dan grew up a lot on Roosevelt, Lake Roosevelt, and he's hunted on the south side of Lake Roosevelt. He has, camped up in the Keller area and had a cabin. I think his parents had a cabin up there. And so he's very, very familiar with all of the water, the Banks Lake, Rufus Woods, Roosevelt. He knows all those very, very well. Every time I talk to him, he's giving me information. I'm going, doggone, I got to figure out how to get this kind of information.
Yeah.
Because people are going to want to know. Because he's always watching the dam flows, the flows that are coming through the dams. So he knows when there's high water, when there's low water, when they're backing up stuff, when they're filling up Roosevelt. And he also knows when they're bringing Roosevelt down. As we all know, Roosevelt fluctuates a lot.
Yeah.
There's probably, I would guess, 25, 30 feet of fluctuation in that reservoir behind the dam. So, and the other thing is I've seen it on Rufus Woods on where we have cows that get down to the water that, I parked my four-wheeler there one time and just decided to go fishing for a couple hours. Yeah, and I came back and it was the water was up on the engine of my four-wheeler. I had to drive it out of the river because I had parked it too close. Because they fluctuated just that much.
Yeah.
And so people just got to be aware of that. I mean, this water is manageable by the Corps of Engineers and by the Bureau of Reclamation.
It is managed.
What the flow is.
Yep.
And so they're going to fluctuate that, especially how much power we're going to be using. How much they need
to
generate.
What the snowpack is, all these other considerations.
So And we don't keep track of that. They do, and so you should.
So, Rusty, yeah. You know, it is a mechanical device that we're operating here, and so is it my understanding that you're going to have a boat that you can go and literally do it like a rescue to somebody that, say, they break down, or let's say they have other difficulties, they run over a log and damage their prop. Are you going to be set up then to go out and retrieve them and get them back?
Well, that's a great question, Ron. Never That'd doing
be
this before.
To provide, right? Yeah. Triple A on the water.
We're gonna learn all through that. But that is one of the things that we considered when we put this whole thing together. Mm-hmm. Was how are we going to be able to manage if something happens to one of our boats? We don't want people stranded out there. Yeah. We are here to help them to enjoy their time, but we're also going to service them.
If and then they likewise, there, we should put the word out that we are here if somebody would get stranded and need assistance, that you can hire us to come and
we can help them out.
Help you out.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
We got boats that we would be able to go out
you
now,
bet.
Or that they could come and rent from us to go help yeah. as well.
Yes.
And so that's the other thing is people bring their pleasure boats here. And they would like to have a boat to go fishing with.
Yeah,
that's another thing that we can we can rent to. They can use our boats to fish while they're still pleasure
exactly.
doing their kind.
And
of
then work. Here's the other thing, you know, is that we're fishermen, we're hunters. You're not renting a boat from ABC Boat Rentals. You're renting a boat from HRO Adventures.
Right.
We know where the action is, guys.
There
we know where to send you. If you ask us where can I go on the river, then we're going to tell you the hot spots.
There you go.
We have tournaments around here and all kinds of other fun things. Oh, there's a whole world of adventure here locally, from boating to fishing to hiking to hunting. I if it's outdoor, we've got it. And the neat exactly. thing about it is it's year round. We have different things in the seasons. That's why I personally like living here.
Well, there's something to do something all to year do all round here.
There's always, and it's different. Yeah. You know, we have snow, we have warm, we have hot. Yeah.
Well, the cool thing is, Ron, you already brought it up. And that was what I was going to leave off with one of the boats was that April 11th through the 13th, they're having a fishing tournament down on Banks Lake, the Three Fish yeah. fishing tournament. And so, in fact, that was the first rental that we had was a guy called me up, and one of my good friends, and he goes, hey, can I use one of your rental boats?
There are lots of fishing tournaments here locally. There's the Brewster mm-hmm. Pool Salmon Fishing Tournament that's huge.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, somebody suddenly, they don't need to drag their boat 300 miles.
That's right.
They can come to HRO Adventures and find everything they need right
stay
here in one place.
Stay at the cabins. And
stay at the cabins. Yeah. Yep.
So keep checking in with us with Rusty's Calendar.
Yeah, Rusty's Calendar.
From here on out.
All right, so Rusty, how can people find you?
Okay, well, as we've talked about several times, and I appreciate Ron. Ron, he keeps throwing it out there, but HRO Adventures, that's the one that we're just so excited about, that we can talk about just about anything and do just about anything, from tours to ranch tours to take, you know, showing people where the hot spots are fishing, mm-hmm. like Ron just mentioned.
Combine rides. Can you imagine?
I hadn't thought about combine rides.
Yeah,
rides.
Insurance
I gotta
figure that one out. Maybe get involved in that.
I might have to talk to the insurance guy about
yeah.
that.
But
or the landowner, how yeah. we about that.
And, but HROAdventures.com, right?
HROAdventures.com, and all my stuff's all there.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's always the OG, mm-hmm. and that's the HiddenRanchOutfitters.com. Been around for 25 years, and you know, we've kind of established ourselves here,
yeah.
and kind of got a good base.
Yeah, reach out and get a hold of Rusty, ask questions. He builds these custom adventures. Just
HRO Adventures website has a brand new podcast page. That's featuring all of the podcast here also.
Oh, you've got to get to it from the website.
Yes. And Dave, where else can a viewer listen to the podcast?
If you just go to Spotify, Podbean, all the usual suspects, it's out there.
We're going to put links on our website, on HRO Adventures, to all the different places where you can listen to the podcast so that you can find your podcast supplier and listen to the HRO Adventures. I think you'll find them really interesting as we go forward.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for the time.
Well,
thanks, Ron.
Dave.
It's been great to have you.
My pleasure, Dave.
Will
thank
you come
you.
Back? We got all kinds of things to talk about.
I think I will, as long
right.
as my wife okays it.
There you go.
I think we're safe here. We haven't touched on any of those.
There you go.
Those hot button topics.
We haven't got you in trouble.
Not all yet. Right. So we're good.
All right. Well, from the HRO Adventures cabins, we'll sign off, and we'll see everybody on episode number 5 coming up. So take care.